KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times and Michael Schneider of TV Guide join me to break down the top entertainment news stories of 2011. From the movie business's efforts to break down the Great Wall of China to the television showdown between Charlie Sheen and Chuck Lorre and more. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
This week, we're doing our That Was the Year That Was program. We have Michael Schneider, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide, and John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, guys.
Hey.
Hello, Kim.
So let's start out by talking about what we think the top story of the year would be in our respective beats or in our respective opinions. And I'll start with you, Mike. Television is your beat. So what do you think?
Well, I think television is actually pretty easy to figure that out. By far the story that had everyone, it became a much bigger story than even in TV. It became an international story. Of course, it was the Charlie Sheen debacle, the Two and a Half Men meltdown, the Charlie versus Chuck Lorre throwdown, whatever you want to call it. It consumed us for a good 3 or 4 months earlier this year.
Yeah, it's almost sort of hard to understand. I mean, it is the number one, as I've said many times, the number one sitcom on TV, and that's very big business. But why it was such a global fascination is almost hard to grasp.
Well, you know, it was a train wreck, first of all. We were watching Charlie Sheen as he completely melted down on television. And this was obviously a scandal circa 2011, where it played out on Twitter, and it played out on the internet, and it played out on streaming video. And Charlie Sheen had all these tools at his disposal to basically melt down in front of all of us, and at the same time, saying the kind of things that you generally don't say toward your boss. Anti-Semitic rants, some really, really harsh things were said against his employer. And as we watched this, we had no idea how it was going to end. Was Charlie going to live even? And what was going to happen to the number one show on television? And it was just a fascinating train wreck to watch.
Yeah, I'll say on his behalf that he would probably deny, and I think has denied, that these were anti-Semitic tirades, but they certainly were tirades and they had a bad aroma.
Yeah, they certainly were tirades. And at the end of the year, when Chuck Lorre was finally able to speak, he spoke to us at TV Guide at length about what happened. And, he said this basically was a man who we thought was going to die. This was cocaine addiction. This was an epic run, as Charlie said, writ large. And they didn't know exactly what to do. So they shut the show down. And at that point, things just got out of control. And we had this scandal that sort of eventually led to a rebirth of this TV show that's now actually doing pretty well in the ratings.
Yeah, I mean, they flirted with Hugh Grant and ended up with Ashton Kutcher, and it's actually gone better than pretty well, hasn't it?
It's done very well. It's still the number one sitcom on television, and the Ashton Kutcher, the critics are mixed, but the critics have always been mixed about Two and a Half Men.
I don't think that show.
if you like critics, that show, yeah. Then it's you like that show, and if you don't, you don't. But obviously, a big chunk of Americans do love that show, there was a lot of interest. Ashton Kutcher came on in that first episode, did about 32 million viewers, which in this day and age is pretty incredible. And they managed to bring back a show that last March looked like maybe on its last legs. And now this rebirth of Two and a Half Men could go for another 3-4 years, putting a lot more money in the pockets of Warner Brothers Television and Chuck Lorre and, of course, Ashton Kutcher's pockets.
Yes, and I'll just say before we move on that Charlie Sheen has his own show coming up, Anger Management. I don't know, any predictions there?
Well, and that's the other interesting thing about this scandal is ultimately it probably saved Charlie Sheen's life. To tell you the truth, he started to clean things up in the middle of the year, and now that he has this show coming on, which FX acquired the rights to this brand new show, Anger Management, which of course is based on the movie of the same name. Now that he's cleaned up his act, it seems like he's actually in a better place. And this show might do pretty well. There's still a lot of interest in just how he looks, how he acts, how he performs. And I think when it does debut in 2013, there will be a lot of interest.
John, what about you? Film world, biggest story for you?
The Hollywood wishes it had a story as exciting as Charlie Sheen. It was a tough year for the movie studios on any number of levels. But I think the things that jump out at me is admissions this year, the domestic box office are going to be below $1.3 billion, which is the lowest level since 1995.
Wow.
The box office is up a little bit from some years because of 3D ticket pricing, but that is not a good development. Adult dramas, which were so huge a year ago, where we had movies like True Grit, Black Swan, King's Speech doing incredibly well, have not performed especially well. And beyond the core theatrical business, the studios have really struggled to develop new businesses. There was Universal's fiasco doing a early video on demand release of Tower Heist. A number of studios tried to do a similar experiment with DirecTV that went nowhere. And the studios continue to be rebuffed trying to get into China, which in a couple of years will become the world's biggest movie market.
So we have this ongoing swoon. People are not buying DVDs. And with the ability to stream stuff, they're not buying. They're kind of renting. They don't see the point in building up some kind of big online library yet. And we continue also to have a raging piracy problem, which the studios are trying to legislate something to. They're finding themselves up against Silicon Valley, which does not like their legislation. So it's very hard to see where the good news is going to come from for the studios right now.
No, and there are so many people who are so excited about the original content that's on television. And I'll tell you, here are the top seven highest grossing films from 2011. Harry Potter, The Deathly Hallows Part 2, Transformers, Dark of the Moon, Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Hangover Part 2, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, Fast 5, Cars 2. Those are the top seven films. So outside of the financial...
I think I sense a trend here, sequel.
But it suggests to me that there is a real creative vacuum, that the studios... I mean, Disney has now made a business out of re-releasing its old animated movies in 3D. It just doesn't feel as if anybody is trying hard enough to create compelling original content. Even within the independent film world, those movies are becoming harder and harder to get made. And as I mentioned, fewer and fewer of them are breaking out at the box office. So it's not just the financial problems, and maybe the creative problems are driving the financial problems, but it does feel like there's real doldrums in the movie studios.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who's not upset and unhappy in the movie business. And it's almost like there are a couple of vicious cycles that go on. You know, they make a lot of these sequels to the point where there's sequel fatigue, comic book fatigue, franchise fatigue. And yet, as you just pointed out, the top movies that do succeed are sequels, and therefore they get motivated to make more sequels. And that feels like one of the vicious cycles. And to me, the other one is this attempt that you alluded to release movies early, streaming. And, you know, this is the battle that we've talked about before with the theater owners. And to me, you get into a dangerous thing, which obviously some major filmmakers like James Cameron have come out against. If you make it available too early, people think, well, I'll just wait, you know, because going to the movies is expensive and not always that fun. So that feels to me like another cycle. They're trying to figure out how to stream it to you, or they're not going to get the money they get if you go to the movies and pay your dollars. And at the same time, every time they do that, to me, they undercut their own business.
Well, and the theater owners have been incredibly resilient in opposing any of these early video-on-demand releases. And at a certain point, something's going to have to give. I don't fully agree. I think there is a legitimate business in video-on-demand, and it will be the right movie at the right time. I mean, if Avatar 2 came out and you had to pay $100 to see it a month before it was in theaters, I can think of tens of millions of people who would have Avatar parties and invite their friends over and pay that kind of money. Now, the theaters might say, we're not going to show that film. I think that's a possibility. It may not be Avatar. It may not be in the near-term future. But the movie theater owners themselves do share some of the blame. They are jacking up prices. The theatrical experience has not improved materially. I think the Motion Picture Association needs to figure out the ratings better. As a parent, I think they're more confusing than they ever have been. So I think there are a lot of things underlying the theatrical business that need to be fixed. And a lot of those things are tied to what it's like to go to a movie theater these days. I think it says a lot about how things stand that probably the most compelling movie story of the end of the year, and I think the likely Best Picture winner, is The Artist, a silent movie that comes from France.
And you just beg for the studios to see that and maybe take a chance and control the budget and roll the dice on something that could potentially be interesting. If you're just joining us, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. I'm talking with John Horn of the Los Angeles Times and Michael Schneider, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide. We're going over our top stories of the year. And it's my turn. For me, I don't disagree with either one of you about the stories you picked as being huge stories, but the one that has really won my heart and that I cannot let go of, no matter how I try, I just can't quit it, is the ongoing News Corp conflagration. And it changes minute by minute. It's been stunning. And what's interesting is, you know, there are very few old school moguls left in the world. Sumner Redstone is one, and well into his 80s. And the other one really is Rupert Murdoch. You know, Rupert Murdoch has been playing this sort of game with his kids for years of who's going to succeed me, which one of you is good enough. Sadly, none of them, with a possible exception of Elizabeth, and that may be a stretch too, is remotely good enough, it seems. James, the heir apparent most recently, has, as we've recently discussed, not only become just absolutely tarred by this story, but in my opinion, may be headed towards possibly being arrested, as have others in that company who are responsible for this phone hacking scandal that has taken up so much ink and attention, as it should. I got to say, you know, it seems obvious to me, having talked to a lot of people who have worked at News Corp, that there's no way this went on and Rupert Murdoch didn't know about it. They're now talking about he's going to be called back before this commission, this Leveson inquiry in Britain. They certainly have not exactly struck anyone as being particularly truthful in their previous testimony. And I don't know, it just feels to me that the damage, even if he's still sitting in the chair, the Murdochs, I don't see how James can succeed him. I think in that case, James's biggest concern is being released on his own recognizance at a certain point or not. So it just is an absolutely stunning development that just keeps going.
No, I have to agree. And I think in many ways, it's starting to feel like Watergate. It wasn't the break-in that was the big news. It's what led to the break-in and the cover-up behind the break-in. And I agree. This is a story we'll be talking about well into the new year.
I think perhaps Chase Carey should consider changing his name to Chase Murdoch. That may make things much
Chase
easier.
Chase Carey being currently number two to Murdoch. And Peter Rice is also a Murdoch favorite who's been groomed for greatness. So I'm sure they are watching these developments with possibly even more interest than I am. So, Mike, that is one stunning downfall. I think in the TV world, there's been at least another gigantic personality who's had a very tough year.
Right. I mean, you're talking about Murdoch's downfall. To tell you the truth, I'm more interested in Oprah's downfall. That's a case of truly where the emperor maybe had no clothes. The fact of the matter is, despite her minions, despite these millions of viewers who we thought she could basically orchestrate toward anything, they didn't show up to her new cable network, the OWN channel. It's been a huge disappointment. Its ratings are actually down versus its predecessor, which was the Discovery Health Channel, a little seen channel that people never even heard of to begin with. OWN launched on January 1st, 2011 to huge, huge news, huge buzz, huge noise, huge marketing, but couldn't get arrested. And as the year progressed, they've gone through several CEOs, several heads of the network. Oprah now has taken a more active role in running the network. But so far, we haven't seen much of what that's going to look like. And now we're about to see Oprah 2.0, OWN 2.0, as she launches her own show. And that was one of the things that a lot of people said was the problem with OWN this year, was there wasn't enough Oprah. So the question is, now that Oprah pushes herself more into the limelight,
well, she's
on this
doing
channel,
a show once a week, right? I mean, a once-a-week show, that's not exactly a lot of Oprah.
It's not Oprah as we used to see her. But, you know, we'll see if this makes a difference at all. But, you know, it's obviously, it's cost Discovery Communications hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's cost the job of several high-level executives there, including most recently Peter Liguori, the COO of Discovery, who's about to leave the company. It's just a mess. And, you know, honestly, it's going to take a lot to really get this channel on the right track. And it'll be interesting to see if they can pull that off in 2012. I have my doubts.
Well, a lot of people think early in the year, Discovery may turn to Oprah and say, you know, you need to put up some of the money too. She's been paying just like interest on half of Discovery's investment up until now, which is money where you and I come from, but not right. Nearly what Discovery has coughed up. And I know David Zaslav, the head of Discovery, is like, we're in it for a longer haul. But there's certainly a lot of skepticism among people I talk to as to how long Discovery can stand this. It's they're losing a lot of money, and it's embarrassing.
Yeah, it's something that looked great on paper, but I guess if Oprah builds it, it doesn't necessarily mean the viewers will actually come.
Well, the hubris of starting the thing, trying to program a network without a lot of repeats. You know, a lot of successful cable networks started with Law and Order reruns or something like that to get them into the viewers. It's a brand that the viewers know. They're trying to more or less build this thing from scratch. And while she was doing her talk show 5 days a week, you look back, and that I don't know if it didn't seem like hubris at the time, but it sure does in retrospect.
Well, and the programming mix of the of OWN initially was this feel-good television, this good-for-you TV, broccoli TV. But honestly, you see what's working. It's the Kardashians. It's Scandal. It's you know, these cheesy reality shows. And
as, not on her network, I might add, but not, no, in and, television. Yeah,
not on her network. And that may be part of the problem is you know, honestly, what works these days are these really over-the-top, scandalous reality shows. And honestly, OWN didn't have those.
Okay, John, second favorite story?
I think it has to be Reed Hastings and Netflix. Hastings is to Netflix what the late Steve Jobs was to Apple. He was a guy who led this company straight up the ladder. They became dominant in the mail order video business. They started a nascent but healthy business online, and then he blew it all up. He added a 60% rate hike for subscribers. He split the mail order and the online streaming business into two separate businesses. Hundreds of thousands of customers dropped their Netflix subscriptions, and he was essentially forced to rebuild the company and more important, rebuild its image within the consumer world.
Well, so one of the interesting stories for next year will be what is Netflix going to be? I guess, you know, assuming it is something. I get the idea that Netflix is sort of dialing back. You know, they were sort of getting into this thing of we're going to give you the more recent releases. And I think they've come to realize that it's not sustainable. They can't pay for those and keep their customers happy and make it work. But I know, Mike, I can see you. Well, you're thinking, yes, but they're going to try and get into programming, original programming. And that, as we know, can be a lion's den.
Well, yeah. And it's sort of, you know, they're trying it both ways. The smartest thing they did this year was they opened up their pocketbook and threw a lot of money toward Imagine TV and 20th Century Fox TV to revive Arrested Development, which has a huge fan base, which basically will be a real interesting experiment in sort of, you know, selling this programming, you know, via Netflix. On the flip side, they're also trying some original programming with this program House of Cards, which
is actually a British show that they're, it was a British miniseries, so they're, it's original in quotes.
Right, right. But they're remaking it, you know, with Kevin Spacey. But interestingly, they decided to pick up two seasons of an untested show, and they're going to try to sell it to viewers who have never heard of this title. That, to me, is much more dicey. I think the Arrested Development move was smart, but the House of Cards move, we'll see.
I'm going to be a little skeptical on the Arrested Development. First of all, I don't even know what deals they have in place or how close they are to making it really happen. I don't know.
They have a deal with the studios and they're working through deals with the talent, but the talent deals I think they'll be able to accomplish. So I think this is pretty real. They've announced it. Everyone seems on board, including you know, Ron Howard even is back.
But I'll stipulate that they will pull this some version of it together. It didn't have a huge fan base, which is why it went off the air in the first place.
Right, right. But you don't need that huge fan base when you're selling it via Netflix, and you do have this rabid fan base.
I think the larger story about Netflix is they are trying to become a new paradigm for a network. I mean, we talk about broadcast networks, about cable channels. I think Netflix, if it succeeds, is going to redefine what a network is, an aggregator, creator, distributor of content. And I think that world is changing. I don't know if Netflix is the answer, but I think the traditional ways in which we look at content and which it's delivered into our home is changing by the week. And Netflix may be that company. Apple might be that company. We don't know. So what they're trying to get at, and obviously they have made some missteps, is creating a new business for content creation and delivery. And it's going to happen. It's not going to be soon, but it's going to happen. And maybe it's going to be Netflix. But I think we're looking at the birth of new models for network distribution.
Coming up after a short break, more of The Year That Was with John Horn of the Los Angeles Times and Michael Schneider of TV Guide. Tell us what you think were some of the top stories of the year on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com.
Hi, this is Darby Maloney, producer of The Business. Catch up with The Business and lots of film and television news on our Facebook page. Search for KCRW's The Business and click like.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today, my regular banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times, joins me along with Michael Schneider, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide, to look back at some of the top entertainment stories from 2011 and a little bit of what may lie ahead. Moving on to some other stuff in television, Mike, a couple of big stories this year that I will touch on and get your opinion on. One is, of course, the
utter collapse of NBC.
Poor NBC.
Poor NBC. And the other is the interesting developments vis-a-vis the attempt of Simon Cowell to prove that he is the king of all media, as far as at least as far as singing competitions go. NBC, you know, we've talked about it on the show before. Bob Greenblatt was brought in, as you know, from Showtime. People were very excited because he seemed like he probably is a man of considerable taste. But as the experiment plays out, it feels like relaunching NBC, you just have to be, it's like superhuman effort and maybe like can't be done. I don't know.
Well, these are massive ships. They're tough to turn around. And I think honestly what we're seeing now is it's going to take reality TV to actually turn the thing around. The return of The Voice, which was a talent competition that did quite well for NBC last year, it comes back in January. They're actually launching it behind the Super Bowl. So they're hoping for big things from this show. And we just saw a few weeks ago the return of Fear Factor, the gross-out reality show that hadn't been on the air in 5 years. It came back, and it did some of NBC's best numbers of the fall. So as highbrow as Bob Greenblatt and NBC are hoping to be with new shows like Smash, which is a show that takes place on Broadway, and it has producers such as Steven Spielberg attached, those shows are all fine. But honestly, the return and the rebirth of NBC is going to be built on the back of these reality shows. And so that'll be interesting to see in the first half of this new year.
And of course, The Voice, which was like water in the desert for NBC in the spring, is going to be facing something new this time. It was in the spring, kind of had the field more or less to itself when it launched. And now it's going to be facing American Idol, which, despite the loss of Simon Cowell, this will be the second season. Last year, everybody thought there would be a swoon, and it didn't swoon at all.
Right. You notice this year, no one's predicting the demise of American Idol.
No,
everyone sort of expected
silent.
It's going to come back, and it's going to do just fine. This is, it's the first in. And when you're the first in, you have that natural advantage that the other shows don't have. And clearly, viewers responded. J-Lo did pretty well.
She did. I thought she was great.
Steven Tyler is interesting.
Weird, but interesting. Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, he's an interesting guy. I just interviewed him recently, and I'm trying to transcribe that interview right now, and that is interesting.
Oh, dear.
But I think, between that and X Factor and The Voice, we have maybe reached saturation point, but who knows? Maybe not. I mean, viewers seem to still be watching these talent shows.
So, John, you mentioned in the film world that China was going to be big, but what is going on there? Why is it that the studios, I mean, obviously the Chinese have their own culture and it's a different world, but they, and we have a culture that may not sync up that well with their culture, but what do you think is the issue here?
Well, first of all, the Chinese audience loves American movies. Avatar grossed more in China than any other territory outside the United States. They just don't get to see them, or they don't get to see them in theaters. There's a huge piracy problem, so a lot of American movies get into China illegally. The Chinese box office is just growing astronomically. It's up 25% this year. It's going to pass $2 billion U.S. They're building 8 screens a day. This is the world's most populous nation, and the Hollywood studios can't get into it. China caps the number of imported films that can be shown in theaters at about 20 titles a year. And of those films, they're largely American. The financier, the producers, get about 17.5% of the box office receipts. In the United States or most parts of the world, it's about 50%. So a movie can do $200 million of business there, and the American studios only get 30. Now, they have tried through the World Trade Organization, through the Motion Picture Association, to break through these quotas, and they haven't succeeded. Hollywood needs a new market. DVDs, as we talked about, are declining, if not collapsing. Here is this nation that is incredibly vibrant. It's growing fast. It's still under screen in terms of how many theaters there are per resident. And Hollywood really does no meaningful business there. So I think if Hollywood can figure out how to get the government to relax the quotas, that could be a boon to the studios. But it's very hard to do. I mean, the government is not willing to relax the quotas, and they're not willing to bow to any kind of government pressure right now.
Doesn't seem like we have a ton of leverage there.
And you have to remember that American studios and producers are incredibly fearful of offending the Chinese. There's a great story earlier this year about a remake of Red Dawn, which imagined a Chinese invasion of the United States. And the producers were trying to sell the movie, and so many distributors were so worried about offending the Chinese that they went back into the film and using visual effects changed the nationality of the invading army from China to North Korea. I think that really, even though it's kind of a silly story, it dramatizes how important this market is. No one wants to offend the Chinese, and everyone wants to exploit its market.
I would say also, you know, we talked when we did this story a year ago. I think it was you, John, who said that this would be 2011 would be the year when the theater becomes the equivalent of a record store. I don't know if it's quite that bad, but we've certainly seen some major consolidation, and we've talked about the stress that the theaters are under and how a lot of this may be their fault, some a lot, but certainly here in LA, wow, we've lost some screens, and we're going to maybe get some fancy new screens, but I don't know where it's going to net out, because that theater-going experience does seem to be somewhat under siege. What about trends going forward, Mike? We're seeing big changes in daytime, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a day part that, you know, we haven't talked a lot about lately. But daytime this year, we saw some huge shifts. I mean, first off, of course, ABC massacring its soap opera lineup, getting rid of One Life to Live and All My Children. These are aging shows that just aren't getting the kind of ratings they used to. They replaced them with low-cost talk shows. And honestly, they're paving the way for Katie Couric to come back to daytime with her new talk show, which will be ready next fall. So we're seeing that change, and we're seeing a lot of change also in the early morning talk shows. CBS yet again blowing up its morning show, the
kind
early
of in
show.
A strange way.
Yeah, I mean. And now bringing in Charlie Rose to the morning.
Gail
for their,
King.
Yeah, for their new show CBS This Morning, going a hard news direction. So that'll be interesting to watch. Syndication, it's fascinating at the moment. Obviously, the disappearance of Oprah left this massive vacuum, and so not only is Katie Couric coming in the daytime, but we're seeing all sorts of shows from Ricky Lake to Jeff Probst to several
others. Anderson Cooper get into the game.
Anderson Cooper this year. We're seeing the big change with Live with Regis and Kelly now that Regis is gone and Kelly's about to audition some new co-hosts. So it's a big time for daytime as we're seeing a lot of changes going on there.
Do you have a prediction as to how Katie will fare in daytime, Katie Couric?
You know, it's tough. That is a tough day part. You look at how Anderson did. He's holding on. He was renewed for a second year, but his ratings are not gangbuster. It's tough to do these shows. Jane Pauley, remember, famously tried to do it a couple years ago. And it's tough to do these more serious, earnest kind of shows. You know, obviously the kind of talk shows that seem to work the best in daytime are of the Maury Povich and Jerry Springer variety.
Once
and clearly,
again.
Katie's not going to want to do that. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
So there is an opening for Ryan Seacrest after all.
Well, Ryan Seacrest on the Today Show. Yeah, that's been supposedly a conversation that was being had. What Ryan Seacrest as a successor to Matt Lauer. What do you think?
I think the bigger conversation being had right now is Ryan Seacrest's future with Comcast. His deal is up there, and I think they're looking for many ways for him to be a part. You know, Ryan Seacrest on the Today Show, not the strangest thing I've heard in the world, but honestly, I have a hard time seeing that happening without the NBC News brass sort of throwing their hands up in the air. But I've heard stranger things.
So I think we are definitely looking forward to a very turbulent 2012. And with that, I will thank both of you. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Schneider, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide, and John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. To comment on today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness or go to our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. You can listen to The Business on demand with our KCRW smartphone apps, and you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.